from the Game Nashville Studios, presented by Wholesale Inc. Mount Juliet. Start your engines. This is the Chasing Checkers Podcast with Chase McCain on Nashville's best sports talk,
ESPN
102.5 The Game.
That's right. Welcome in. Chasing Checkers, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are on thegamenashville.com, on iTunes as well. Rate, subscribe, review. Just search Chasing Checkers in the podcast store there on iTunes. You can get a brand new episode every Friday afternoon right to your phone. It is that simple. Or, of course, go to thegamenashville.com and you can listen on Saturdays at 7 and Sundays at 8 here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Big show this week. They're all big, but I'm very excited about talking to Darryl Waltrip. He is going to join us. You know, he made the announcement last week that he was stepping out of the TV booth when Fox is done. So I was able to catch up with him. He's going to be on the show, and we'll get into a lot of different things about his career and the decision and where racing is today. So excited for you to hear that. And also Clint Bowyer scheduled to join the show as well as they get ready for racing from Richmond this weekend. But have to go back before we go forward, go to Bristol, where it was another win by Kyle Busch. His third of the season in the Cup Series, I should say, because we know he wins in just about everything that he drives. And he is in a great position to possibly go for another championship. And I believe right now he is the odds-on favorite. But what was fun about this one, A, the racing was really, really good. Not many fans were there to see it, unfortunately. But the racing was really, really good. And you had the penalty by Brad Keselowski. That kind of it ended his day. It was tough to see how that went down there at the end of the race. And we'll hear from Scott Miller here in just a second on why they made that call. But he was the guy that you kind of thought, okay, he's going to get it done. He's going to be the one to win. And that doesn't surprise anyone because Keselowski and Penske and the Fords have had a good year there so far. But that penalty cost him. And that puts Kyle Busch, who had been up there all day, in a position to get the win. But his brother Kurt was right behind him. And Kurt and Kyle, you kind of were wondering, okay, is this going to be a battle? Or is it going to come down to the Busch brothers? And Kurt just couldn't catch up to him. Kyle was able to pull away and get the win. But I thought it was really funny after the race what Kurt Busch had to say about racing his brother.
It was a tough battle in our number one Chevy. The Monster Energy team's doing a good job. That one's tough. I really wanted to beat him. I was going to wreck him. I was wanting to stay close enough so that when we took the white, I was just going to drive straight into 3 and 4. I mean, he's already won. He figured he can give a little love to his brother. Nah.
Older brother, especially.
I wanted that one bad. I feel like him right now. I'm all like, I'm all mad because I didn't win. But this car, we're struggling on qualifying. We struggle on taking off. And I just can't get that right rear to grip until it gets heat in it, and it's hard to be patient when you're running for the win on old tires. So I'm happy that we were in position to do it. This group of guys, we're not quite ready to win yet, but that was close. And I was going to wreck my little brother to win today, but I just, with three laps to go, I stepped out in turn one, and I wasn't close enough after that. But thanks to Matt McCall and everybody at Ganassi, this number one Monster Chevy's fast, but we just got to fine-tune it all.
Kurt Busch and that Ganassi team, I believe, they're close to getting a win, as you heard him say. Still got a little bit of work to do, but they've had some good runs so far this year, first time together. You wonder if because of that, Kurt Busch may decide, you know, I'm gonna come back, because I believe he's only on a one-year deal. So, you know, who knows what that brings, but good race there at the end. Kyle Busch gets the win. You'll hear from him in just a second, but more on Brad Keselowski. So what happened there was 19 to go. Brad Keselowski goes into the pits alongside Joey Logano, and he relinquishes the lead to Kyle Busch, who does not pit. Keselowski had a two-tire stop. He was the first off pit road, but he lined up fifth. This was all under caution. Well, there were two cars that should have been in front of him, so he was lining up out of position. Therefore, NASCAR called the penalty, and he was frustrated, but he talked to officials after the race. They explained everything, and he goes, okay, well, it was a miscommunication from the team standpoint, and therefore he understood, and he thought they made the right call. Scott Miller, who is the executive Vice President of Competition. He was on SiriusXM NASCAR Radio earlier this week and explained the call.
We were trying to get him in the right spot in the lineup, and we were communicating with his spotter via the race channel, which is their responsibility to listen to per the rule book. And numerous times we told him to give the six car belonged in front of him, give him space to get in there, and he didn't. And as we talked to Brad after the race, I think it was a breakdown in communication on their side, because he said that he never really received that communication from his spotter. That's where the problems started, and you know, obviously, unfortunately, it didn't end the way that Brad would have wanted it to end. But it's their responsibility to monitor what we're saying and what we're trying to get them to do, and it didn't appear that happened as it should have.
So it's an unfortunate situation for Brad, because obviously he was in a position to win the race. He has every right to be frustrated, but his team did not communicate to him. And when that happens, it stinks, but that's just kind of a part of it. That's why it's a team sport. So, you know, you can be frustrated, and I respect Brad saying that it was, you know, that NASCAR made the right call, because they did. And therefore, you just kind of take it and you move on. So that sets up Kyle Busch to win the race. And he met up with Fox Sports, of course, after he got out of the race car, and paid tribute to DW.
Such an iconic place. What's it mean to have won here 8 times?
It ain't 12, that's for sure. So I got more to go, but we're getting there, and it's fun. You know, it's the most active driver, I guess. I think I've heard that. But, you know, there's a lot more years left, hopefully.
8 wins for him at the Bristol Motor Speedway. Pretty impressive. And look, it's not 12, but he's got a long way to go before his career is done. So it wouldn't shock me if he gets to that point, you know, it's sometime in his career. But with that win, he ties Lee Petty on the all-time wins list, and was asked about that in his post-race press conference.
I'll say it again. I've said it a few times, but it's pretty cool to continue to just have the opportunity to go out there and win these races. And when you win these races, the numbers will just continue to add up. And the addition of that and getting to Lee Petty, I mean, you're starting to get into some really heavy company that's at the top 10 of the all-time wins list of our series and of our sport. You know, I feel as though I've just done my fair share and have been with some amazing people over the years that have gotten me to this number thus far. And we'll just keep going.
And I think he's going to keep going. You know, we're seeing it this year, but he was in the big three last year. He won a bunch of races, and, you know, the year he got hurt, he came back and won and did enough to win the championship. I mean, I just think this is not going to slow down anytime soon. The guy can just flat out drive a race car, and it's fun to watch whether you like him or you don't like him. You know, I think there's, and I'm going to bring him up to Darrell Waltrip, but I think there's going to be drivers that you just don't like. And the reason you don't like him is because they win all the time. I mean, a lot of people don't like Tom Brady and they don't like Bill Belichick. You want to know why? Because they win all the time. And my whole thing is, yeah, that's fine. You don't have to like them, but you can't complain that they win all the time. You got to figure out a way to beat them. And if you can't do that, then I don't really know what else to tell you. But that's kind of how it is with Kyle Busch. And what's funny is I brought up Kurt earlier saying he would wreck him. Of course, that word got back to Kyle, and he had to give his thoughts.
He told me in victory lane, and I told him, I was like, you can't tell people that you're going to wreck them before you do it, because when roles are reversed, that person's going to wreck you because you've already told them that you were going to wreck them. So I guess if I'm ever running second to Kurt, I'm going to wreck him. But, you know, it's just, I don't know. I'm glad it didn't turn out that way and he couldn't get to me, because I certainly wouldn't want to have been in that situation. So I'm just glad that I could finally hit my marks halfway decent and drive away a few more inches there towards the end of the race. And I think he was trying really, really hard, and I seen him get kind of crossed up in my mirror a couple times off of 2, and I think he got in the fence once or twice. So that just gave me that little extra gap that I needed to be able to bring it home.
Kyle Busch joking about his brother and them wrecking each other, but he gets the win. Kurt, of course, as I mentioned, is second. Joey Logano comes in third. Ryan Blaney fourth. Denny Hamlin, 5th, Paul Menard, 6th, Clint Bowyer, who you will hear from in just a second, 7th, Daniel Suarez with another great run, another top 10, he's in 8th, Ryan Newman, 9th, and Jimmy Johnson rounds out the top 10. Now, Jimmy Johnson has started to turn it around since that horrible run at Martinsville. He turned it around at Texas, sat on the pole, had a really good finish, and now another top 10 at Bristol. So maybe Jimmy Johnson's starting to find his groove with the new crew chief and all that stuff going on at Hendrick Motorsports. Chase Elliott finished just outside the top 10 in 11th, and Matt DiBenedetto came home in 12th. So how about him? Matt D having a good run. But Clint Bowyer racing hard with Joey Logano, and it's just Bristol. That's how it works sometimes.
Hell, yeah. I mean, it's just you get a car that good, and, man, I've been coming here a long time. We've gotten close a few times. Just feel like, you know, damn, I want to win this place. I don't know. He was chopping down pretty hard, and I know it's time to race, but he didn't leave me a whole lot of room right there off of 4, and I got loose, and then by the time I got kind of wiggled up, we just barely touched, and just must have cut the valve stem out of it or something, but just crummy luck, man. Haas Automation Ford was really good. Fun place to race. You know, I'm sorry. If a fan can't like that kind of race, then I've been racing all my life, and I'm literally, you're out there, I mean, with a smile on your face, racing, you know, 2 or 3 wide to watch that in an Xfinity race yesterday. I feel like we finally got a good, that traction compound down on the bottom, finally got a good blend of it, right? However they're doing, whether it's a 50-50.
It's 50-50.
It's the 50-50, not
it's
the 80.
50-50 blend, not the 80-20.
So the 80-20 is out. The 50-50 is in. I think it's a good blend. If you look, it's still there. You know, over the last couple of years, and we've been trying that, it's gone. I mean, I was, my strong suit was the bottom. That's where I was the best. And just, unfortunately, Bernardet again.
Clint Bowyer is going to break through and win one of these things. It could be this weekend at Richmond because he's really good there. But he's close. He is so close. I know how frustrating it's been for him to be close and not get it. But I really feel like it's going to happen for him, just the way they've been running. And, you know, he had some comments about attendance at Bristol and that, you know, the hotels, the prices are just too high, and they are. I mean, and there's not many to choose from there around the racetrack. And it pains me because it's such a fun place to go. You know, the night race, I've been there a few times, and it just, I don't understand. And this was some of the best racing that they've had here in the last few years. And, I mean, there might have been 30, 35,000 people there, and the place seats over 100. I just don't get it. It just doesn't make sense to me. And I know a lot of racetracks have that problem, and hopefully they can get it fixed. But, I mean, NASCAR's got to get involved, and they got to do whatever it takes to get these people to come to the racetrack because they're missing out on a great show. Speaking of putting on a great show, Darrell Waltrip has done that in the race car for a long time, and then for the last 19 years, he's done that as a part of the Fox Sports booth. And he announced that he's going to retire after Bristol. He announced at Bristol he's going to retire after the Fox season is done, and he will join us next here on Chasing Checkers, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Back here, Chasing Checkers, ESPN 102.5 The Game, online at thegamenashville.com. Chase McCabe here with you, and pleased to be joined by our next guest, as promised, Darrell Waltrip, NASCAR Hall of Famer, and also, of course, in the booth on Fox NASCAR, at least for a little while longer. DW, how's it going?
That's going well. Yeah, I'm up here in Richmond getting ready for qualifying later on this evening, and a little cloudy, a little overcast, might rain a little bit, but yeah, we usually find a way to get the races in, so I'm pretty excited about what we're going to see, another short track, and I love the short tracks where I grew up, so, you know, with Bristol and Martinsville and now Richmond, the short tracks are the place to be.
Yeah, and hopefully there'll be another short track on the schedule, Nashville,
yeah,
at some point.
Both. I hope you're right about that. I'd love to see the fairgrounds revived and, you know, get some good NASCAR racing. I don't know, Xfinity, trucks, I don't care what they get, just get some NASCAR racing back at the track.
Well, we'll start with that and then get into your announcement here in just a few. But the steps are there. The awards banquet is coming back or coming here for the first time at the end of the season. And we know that the folks that run Bristol have entered into an agreement, and you have the Formosas there that are running the track. It seems like things are starting to come together. There's just going to be a few more steps. Obviously, they have to put some money into the joint and fix it up.
Yeah, there's so many obvious things that need to be done before NASCAR would even, bring one of their premier series back there. We got to get safer barriers put up, and there just needs a lot of little odds and ends things done, and needs some money spent on it. Hadn't anything done to it in years. I think the most exciting thing for me, Tony Formosa has done an amazing job of keeping the place open and keeping it going, and so I can't fault him for that. But I think with SMI and the folks at Bristol and Marcus Smith and that whole crowd, there are just so many options. They have the opportunity to maybe do a lot of things there that couldn't have gotten done in the past. So looking forward to see what the future for the fairgrounds is going to be. I think it's pretty bright, and I think there are some opportunities. And I believe Marcus Smith and Jerry Caldwell and all those guys, I believe they're really committed to getting racing back to the fairgrounds like it used to be. So it may take a little bit of time. It's not going to happen overnight, but I see some great things in the future for the fairgrounds.
Well, one thing that I've always noticed about NASCAR, and you were at the forefront of this, because we know that you can be vocal, and the drivers are vocal. And every driver that I've had on this show since I started it, I always ask them, hey, Nashville, what do you think? Would you guys want to come back here? And they all say yes. They all go back to that short track, whether they've raced there or they haven't raced there, of just how much history is involved with it and how the sport needs to be in a city that's growing and obviously has a huge fan base.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about that. And certainly getting the awards banquet in Nashville is a big plus for the city. And I think the mayor and I think all the folks over on the fair board, I think there's a real renewed interest in maybe getting something going over there. You know, with a soccer stadium going in right in the same property, and maybe there's a way to connect the two together to where, we have soccer and racing, and it becomes a sports complex. It's in an ideal spot. It's right in the middle of town. It's 115, 20 acres right in the middle of town. I just think the possibilities are endless, and once you get somebody like SMI over there, Bruton Smith and his crowd, and they want to make some improvements and get things rolling. I'm just really optimistic about what may happen. It's an iconic speedway. You can ask Dale Jr. You can ask, look at all the incredible drivers that have gone through that place through the years. And, we had two cup races there at one time, and then we lost them and they went away. And the short tracks kind of faded away. A lot of short tracks closed down, but I think the fan today, they enjoy those close quarter racings, rubbing is racing and trading paint and door handle to door handle. And the thing I love about, like, any of the short tracks, Martinsville, Bristol, we're at Richmond, you're so close to the action. You right. Almost feel like you can reach out and touch the car. So it's just a much more exciting experience for the fan to have those cars so close and be able to just feel like you're almost in the driver's seat in a lot of cases.
And I love the, back in the day, a short track schedule. I mean, you kind of basically had that short track season where you'd bounce around to all of them. And, the schedule changes that they're making in 2020 and then again in 2021, I kind of hope they get back to that. And, not just Nashville down the line, but I'd love to see a place like Iowa on the schedule.
Yeah, a lot of people talk about Iowa. It's Iowa's a bit of a stretch. It's a pretty good racetrack. A lot of guys like racing there, but it's really almost like the track that Dover built over there at Lebanon. It's kind of out in the middle of nowhere. There's right. Not a lot of facilities around, and I think that's important for the longevity of any track, is where it's located, what's it close to, are there hotels, are there restaurants. You look at Charlotte Motor Speedway, right in the middle of kind of a growing area. You look at the fairgrounds in Nashville, right in the middle of town. Those are the tracks that seem to have the longevity and seem to be able to hang in there, in good times and bad. So I know the schedule changed for 20, and that's great. I like what they've done. But I think 21, we could see some real super, really big changes. Maybe some tracks lose a date, maybe some new tracks come on the schedule. I think there are a lot of things that may happen in 21.
Darrell Waltrip here on Chasing Checkers, NASCAR Hall of Famer and broadcaster for Fox NASCAR. So you made an announcement last week, and I read the article you did with Mike Organ of the Tennessean and thought it was pretty cool that you picked Bristol, a place you won at 12 times. Kyle Busch had a little tribute to you in Victory Lane about that. And, you know, why now? That's a simple question. Why now?
Well, for a lot of people that don't know me that well, I'm 72 years old, and the first time I ever raced, I was 12 years old. So that's 60 years of my life that I've devoted and dedicated to being where I am today. When I was growing up in Owensboro, racing go-karts and then hobby cars, and I moved to Franklin, Tennessee to be able to race to fairgrounds, and I ran my first cup race at Talladega in 1972. I've raced with the greatest drivers of all time, in my opinion. I've done things I never thought I'd be able to do, accomplished things I never thought I'd possible. And so I've had an incredible career as a driver. And for the last 19 years, I've been in the TV booth every week with Mike Joy, Larry McReynolds, and now Jeff Gordon. That has been one of the most fun things I've ever done. I've been in movies. I've written books. I've spoken to Nashville at the President's Prayer Breakfast. I've flown on Air Force One. I don't know. I can't think of anything else I want to do, so I think I'm going to take some time off now and enjoy my family. And my girls grew up to track, and, you know, they grew up under my nose before I even knew it. And now I have a grandchild, Louisa, Jessica's daughter, and she's 14 months old. And I want to be a good grandfather, and I want to be able to take her to Disney or fishing or whatever she wants to do. So the next chapter of my life is, you know, maybe it'll slow down a little bit, but I know I'll enjoy it because I have so much to be grateful for and so much to look back on that I think now's the right time. Bristol was the right place, and it's time for me to think about doing something else with the rest of my life.
You bring up that you're 72. When I read that and then I heard you say it again here, I was like, wait, what? Because you don't act like it. I mean, you're still the same DW I grew up watching.
Well, I've been blessed. I was saying the other day, well, I haven't really had that many. I haven't been operated on, I've had 11 surgeries in my life, and I had to add them all up before I realized that. But and the race cars have hurt me a few times, but I've survived. And I tell you, you won't believe I had such good training for what I'm doing now. Ralph Emery was a great friend of mine back in the day, and he had that show on Nashville Network called Nashville Now, and his morning show over at Channel 4. Just so many opportunities that I had to learn what it was like to be in front of the camera, what it meant to be entertaining, what it meant to have fun. And I've been able to use those things that I learned from those experiences in Nashville. Me and Hope Hines doing a show on Channel 5 with Joe Carver called Pit Stop. And I've enjoyed the media. I'm a huge country music fan. I've been to the Grand Ole Opry many times. Me and Terry Bradshaw actually sang on the Grand Ole Opry. I've introduced Charlie Daniels as when he was inducted in the Hall of Fame on his 80th birthday. There's just so many things I've done, and you know, the bucket is just about empty.
Talking with Darrell Waltrip. And, you know, when I was reading everything and you came to this decision, did you have some similarities of when you decided it was time to get out of the race car and go into the broadcast booth? Did you have some of those same conversations, not with your family or your wife, but with yourself?
Well, when I was still, you know, everything happens for a good reason. Had I not retired from driving when I did, I wouldn't have had the job with Fox that I have. And so that was good timing on my part. But that was the hardest thing I thought I'd ever have to do because I just felt like my identity was locked, all kind of wrapped up in what I'd done as a race car driver. And so I thought, when I leave here, when I'm not a driver anymore, you know, are people going to remember me, and are they going to talk about my driving career? And then I met David Hill from Fox Sports, and he offered me a job as an analyst on TV. And I thought, well, that's not a bad gig. You know, it's a half a year and pays pretty good, and it can be a lot of fun, keeps me involved in the sport. And so I jumped on that right away. And quite honestly, it's the best thing I've ever done. I've never enjoyed anything anymore. I love driving cars. I still love driving cars today. and I still love being in the booth talking about the drivers and the cars. But my TV job has been the best thing I've ever done, and really hard to walk away from such a great team. I'm surrounded by great. Mike Joy's been a mentor to me my whole career. He interviewed me in 1989 when I won the Daytona 500. I've known Mike for years. Larry McReynolds and I became great friends, and now Jeff Gordon and I, the people in the truck, Eric Shanks, my boss now, David Hill, my former boss. It's like being on a race team, a TV production team, the guys that bring you the race every week. It's just like being on a race team. We all have our roles. We all know what we're supposed to do, and I'm been blessed and fortunate to be surrounded by the best in the business, I think.
Daryl, as you get ready to step out of the booth and you look at your 19 years in it and then your racing career before that, we have seen different eras of NASCAR, whether it's, you know, leadership or drivers or owners, things like that. As you step out, where do you think this sport is right now?
Well, it's at a crossroads. There's no question about that. TV, I just don't think people realize how important TV is to this sport. The amount of money that TV pays these racetracks to cover the races is phenomenal. And all the drivers that all of us have known and loved have retired. And every day somebody that we've known for a long time or somebody we've been a fan of or someone we care about either passes away or steps away. So we're at a real crossroads, I think, in this sport. And it's going to be up to the management of the people that run this sport to decide what's going to happen next. I tell them all the time, Here's one of my favorite sayings. Just because I disagree with you 20% of the time doesn't make me your enemy 80% of the time. And there's a lot of things that I disagree with. There's a lot of things that they do or consider doing that I personally wouldn't do. But I'm supposed to be a TV analyst, and that's my job. And they didn't hire me to run NASCAR. They didn't hire me to make the rules. They didn't hire me to be a decision maker about how they run the sport. But I still have my opinions. And so I tell them all the time, we got too many rules. Every week we got more rules. And you just, you can hardly survive in this sport anymore without breaking a rule. And fans tell me as I go around and I talk to people, I say, what do you think? I said, I hate all the changes. I hate the way, I don't like this. I don't like that. I don't like this. I don't like that. And there's so many changes that take place almost on a weekly basis that, somewhere down the road, I hope we can stabilize the sport and stop making changes and start looking at, how we grow the sport back to the way it used to be. We were at Bristol this past week, and I got to tell you, I know that place holds 160,000 people. That's a huge amount of people. But there was probably maybe 38,000 mm-hmm. people at that race Sunday, which it looked like there were more people in the pits than there were in the grandstand, to tell you the truth. And that hurts my heart because the racing, that was one of the best races we've had in quite some time. And it's one of the best races on TV I think people have seen in quite some time. So I don't think that necessarily the on-track product is the problem. I think it's all the crap that goes on around the Sunday race that people want to see. They're just tired of change. I guess that's the only way I know how to put it.
Yeah, and that's the thing for me. I started watching NASCAR when I was probably 4 years old because my dad was a big fan. He was a fan of yours, fan of Earnhardt Petty. So I grew up, in that era. And then the 90s when it peaked and was challenging the NFL almost, and people were going to the track and watching on TV. And then of course now I've watched it to the era that we're in. And for me, over the past couple of seasons, I feel like NASCAR, it's like, all right, we're getting it back. We're trying to make the racing what it used to be, and with this new rules package, I think there's still things they can tweak and work on, which they're doing, but the product is good. Now it's like, okay, how do I get people to go back to the track and watch on TV?
Yeah, it's almost a contradiction. We talk about how great it is, how good it is, but boy, you wait till next year. We're going to have a new car. We're going to make some different rules, and boys, you'd like it now, but it's going to be really, that's what I've heard. Almost year in and year out. This is the best race it's ever been. This is the best I've ever seen it. But boy, wait till we make these. We're going to make some change and make it even better yet. That's what people are tired of. You got to leave it alone. You got to let it breathe a little bit. And we just don't seem to be able to do that. It's like qualifying. Something as simple as trying to figure out who's going to win the pole for the race has turned into a fiasco. And again, they've changed it again this week. They've shortened the periods, the period of time. Now it's 5, 5, and 5, and where it was 10, 10, and 5 minutes before you have to roll each session. Why don't you just line them up slowest to fastest, send them out one at a time, give them a lap, and at the end of the day, you find out who's on the pole. That's the way we used to do it, and I think that's the way people liked it. But, you know, we started tinkering with it, and here we go. It wasn't broken, but we're going to work on it till it is.
Right. Well, and you know, don't take this the wrong way, but like with qualifying, you're not necessarily worried about TV ratings with qualifying. You want to line up for the race car or for the race, line the cars up, and then you go out for the show on Sunday. That's been my thing. They tried to do this with qualifying and make it a little more exciting for, you know, the fans that went and watch it or want to watch it on TV. I mean, just have them line up, like you just said, fastest to slowest. I don't really see why that's so hard.
Well, it isn't. And sometimes I think it's the unintended consequences. It's the blind obvious. It's the things that if you step back and you look at the situation and you say, I don't understand what we're trying to accomplish here. And listen, I'm not saying we're not totally, you know, I'm not saying TV's not, we're not totally innocent. We want to, if we're going to cover qualifying, which we do every week, we want it to be exciting and we want it to be fun.
Sure.
And I thought when they went to these three sessions, you know, all cars at one time, 24 cars and then 12, I thought that might make it, you know, a little more interesting, a little bit more intriguing, a little bit more fun. But in fact, it hasn't. And now we're starting to, you know, tinker with that. I just say you take your practice speeds and the slowest car goes out first to the fastest car last. And whoever has the best time, one lap, that's the guy that starts up front. And that's so simple. And that's the way we used to do it. And I wish we'd get back to that.
He is Darrell Waltrip, NASCAR Hall of Famer, and of course, part of Fox NASCAR's coverage, the Richmond Raceway this weekend, a little short track racing, how we like it. Kyle Busch, DW, is just in a league of his own right now. He's over 200 wins in the three national series. He won this past weekend at Bristol, has a lot of success at Richmond. I was listening to another show on SiriusXM, and they asked the question of who's going to be Kyle Busch when there isn't Kyle Busch. And I thought that was very interesting because we ask that with every era. You know, who's the next Dale Earnhardt? Who's the next Darrell Waltrip? Who's the next Jeff Gordon, Jimmy Johnson, and so on?
Yep.
Is there someone that can be the next Kyle Busch?
Well, he's people get very upset with me and others that cover the sport because we talk about Kyle Busch all the time. Well, you talk about the guy that's leading the race or the guy that's winning, and that happens to be Kyle Busch. It could be Kyle Larson. It could be Chase Elliott. It could be Ryan Blaney. It could be any number of other guys, but no other guys have been able to step up and do what Kyle has done. So, you know, we have to talk about the guy that's leading the race. We have to talk about the guy that won the race, and we have to talk about how great he is. And quite honestly, I've said it over and over again, and I don't know why people want to get mad at you about it, but he's the best driver I've ever seen. He has more car control. He has more determination. He's on the right team at the right time with the right crew chief. He's in his prime, and he's capitalizing. And so don't get mad at me or Kyle Busch or anybody. Get mad at your guy. How come your guy can't do that? If you're a Chase Elliott fan, well, a Chase, he's doing it. How come you can't do it? Or if you're a Ryan Blaney fan, hey, Ryan, he's doing it. How come you can't do it? And so it always kind of tickles me when people say, we talk about Kyle Busch too much. We talk about the guy that wins the race, and he just happens to have three wins right now, and that's the guy we talk about.
Yeah, simple.
And to answer your question, Kyle's only 32, 3 years old. He's not that old, so he's going to be around a while yet. But there's a bunch of 20-somethings. Hey, Joey Logano, you know how Joey Logano is? You know how old he is? He's 29.
Yeah.
He's not even 30 yet. So Joey Logano could be a guy that could get in the zone and do what Kyle's doing. And certainly we all expect Chase Elliott or Ryan Blaney or any number of other young men that are over in the garage that are in great cars with great teams to, at some point in time, maybe get up there and challenge him. But so far, they haven't been able to do it.
We'll see, and we'll see if anyone can, because right now I think he's on track to possibly win his second championship, albeit it is early, but we'll see. DW, I always enjoy having you on the show, and congratulations again. I know you got a few more races to call before Fox hands it over to NBC, but you're always the best to come on and represent Nashville and Franklin, and loved your racing career, now your broadcasting career. So congratulations, and enjoy being a granddad.
All right, buddy, I will. I bought me a brand new set of golf clubs and going to take a few lessons. And the next thing you know, I might be on the senior tour.
Hey, you and Rick Bird, can you know,
yeah,
you're both.
Yeah, me and the coach.
That's right. All right, Daryl.
Thank you, man.
The one and only Daryl Waltrip, DW, just the best. I mean, really, that's the only way you can put it. And a guy that, you know, it's I always have to be careful that I don't want to, you know, when I have some of these guys on that I grew up watching or I really admire, you know, I'm not trying to be a germ or anything, but it's the truth. I have a lot of respect for him. He was at the end of his career, obviously, when I was really understanding the sport and getting into it. But being a historian of the sport, I go back and I watch old races and listen to old stories. And then now having him, you know, be a broadcaster, it's pretty cool to be able to interview him and have him on my show. So appreciate it. I hope he's not a stranger to us, you know, that he'll be around even after his broadcasting career is done. But Daryl Waltrip hanging it up, hanging the microphone up next to his racing helmet after NASCAR on Fox's schedule is done. When we come back, you will hear from Clint Bowyer, driver of the number 14. He will join us next here on Chasing Checkers, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Back here at Chasing Checkers, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We go from Hall of Famer Daryl Waltrip to a future Hall of Famer, Clint Bowyer. He's on the line with us. Clint, how are you?
Good. You just had Daryl on?
I did just have Daryl on. It was a lot of fun.
Pretty cool. I bet.
You know, local guy, lives in Franklin, which is not too far from Nashville, and he, you know, had to make some news in the past week or so, so we had to have him on.
Yeah. Good, man. He's a hero, for sure.
Yeah, well, let's start with that. Cause
what's up, man? Let's talk a little racing.
Let's do it. Let's talk some racing. I'll start with DW because with him stepping away out of the booth, I mean, obviously he's a Hall of Fame driver, but he's become a Hall of Fame broadcaster as well and an ambassador to the sport. So what does it mean to you guys still driving the cars that he's stepping away?
Man, I think, you know, it's a bummer. I think, you know, he says it's time. You know, I went to his press release or his presser that he had in the infield and talked, told so many great stories of obviously where he came from, how he got to where he is today, and where his head's at on all of it. You know, I think for a spokesperson, a salesman to tell our story, you couldn't ask for a better ambassador. I mean, he's done a great job, you know, and he genuinely loves racing. He loves this sport, and he's been on top of the sport and everywhere in between, you know, and I think it's definitely going to be a void that somebody's going to have to fill for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Talking with Clint Bowyer, and he made that announcement at Bristol where you guys were at last weekend, and I know you had a heck of a run, ended up finishing seventh, and wasn't quite the day that you wanted, but it seems like you're close, man.
Yeah, that's what stinks. You know, when you really step back and talk to you a week from it, yeah, you finished seventh, you know, but that didn't reflect how our day went. We drove up through them, led laps. We were fast. We, you know, if the right circumstances could have been, we would have won that race. We were really, really good. The car to beat on a long run. Everything was going our way. Everything was looking good. But that's racing, man. You know, when you're racing around there, 500 laps around there and having that good a day, trust me, you're in a car looking over your shoulder going, all right, what's going to happen, man? Where's it coming from? And, you know, I got down to inside 50 to go, and Joey and I were racing hard on a restart. I got into his left rear a little bit. It wasn't anything intentional. It wasn't anything out of the ordinary. You know, I mean, it's just you rub a little bit there from time to time. But it just folded his fender up, his quarter panel up, just enough to where it caught a jagged edge on my tire and cut the sidewall out of it. I mean, super bummer deal. Could have been catastrophic. Hit the wall and everything else, but it tells you how good our car was and how good our weekend was going. We was able to at least bounce back, pit, fix the damage, and bounce back and finish, you know, with a single digit.
Well, and Kyle Busch wins the race, and I can just tell that you guys are all sick of him winning too because his own brother said he'd wreck him.
Well, that definitely was the downside. side of all of it is that little punk one. But he's good, man. You can't take nothing away from him. He's a damn good driver, and he's in some of the best running equipment right now there is. That's a deadly combination. There's no question about it. You know, that being said, we all got to go out there and get our stuff better, make better decisions, and drive the car better. You know, I mean, you can't outrun experience. I've said that for a long time. You see all these new kids coming in, and they still struggle to beat the old guys. Experience goes a long ways in any sport. And, you know, Kyle's been a benefactor of a massive amount of experience because of all the races that he runs. I mean, he runs trucks. He runs Xfinity week in and week out. And as we've changed these rules, they have played into that hand. Before, you know, when I quit racing Xfinity full time, it was because the cars weren't the same anymore, and you just didn't see a benefit. It didn't pay all that good. And you're out here, you know, four wide with some punk kid at Talladega fixing to go upside down and on fire. You're like, what the hell am I doing this for? It used to be a day where those cars, you know, were a lot the same, handled the same, and what you learned on Saturday, you could definitely benefit from on Sunday. That went away quite a bit there for a while, but right now with the new rules that we've implemented, basically we're racing on Sundays what you race on Saturdays. So I think that experience is paying off for him. Sorry.
And you know, speaking of getting better, sponsorship helps that. You announced a new sponsor there at Stewart Haas, Toco. Hope I'm saying that right. Toco Warranty joins your team on the 14. How did that all come about?
Man, always a big day, exciting day when you can announce new partnerships on these cars. How it comes about is the company, you know, that has an awesome warranty company, you know, comes and looks at our sport and our fan base. I mean, it all comes off of the fan base. You know, that's the frustrating thing about, you know, what we saw at Bristol. I mean, there's a lot of things that contributed to poor grandstands there. The track's got to do a better job of putting on a better show. And that's not just on Sunday. That's Friday to you know, Sunday. If you're asking fans to be there and camp out and spend their hard-earned dollar, we've got to make sure that they're having a damn good time all weekend long. That race at Bristol was probably the best race we've had in 7 or 8 years. We learned some things there. So we got to put forth that. We got to re-earn, you know, that fan's, you know, dollar back. But nonetheless, our fan base is still strong. When you look back, you know, I think we were on a span of 5 weeks in a row where we were the number one sporting event on TV. We're still the number one sport on TV, and people, you know, it's no different if you watch politics or anything else. Somebody gets off on a negative tangent, and it drags everybody down, you know, and certainly this is a positive vibe to a company that saw our fan base, the strength in numbers, and the masses and wants to be a part of that. I was excited about that because I know that's a benefit to them. I know the strength of our race fans. I see it. I've lived it for my whole life. I've seen it. And when you think about a warranty company, this isn't like any extended warranty company that you've ever been approached at a backside of a dealership or anything else. There's no upfront cost. There's no long-term commitments. There's nothing. There is a website where you can come in and choose what works for you and pay as you go. It's simple as that. I mean, how could you go wrong? When I look over in the parking lot at a racetrack, I see blue-collar, working-class people. I don't see $200,000 Mercedes sitting in the parking lot. If they want to come, absolutely, we're going to show them a good time, too. We're probably going to put them, hide them up in a suite somewhere. But, you know, the majority of the people sitting in them grandstands need an awarding company like this, and when they come across the table and I saw it, I was like, hey man, get me in front of them. I want to meet these people and see what they're all about, and the rest is history.
Clint Boyer here on the line with us, and you brought up Bristol. It's like you read my mind and knew where I was going to go. But being, you know, the Cup Series, the home track for where I'm at here in Nashville, it's not too far away. It hurt my heart to see the grandstands empty, and I've been to that track 5-6 times in my life and would go every time if I could, and I just didn't understand it. And I know it's hard to find a hotel. There's different things like you brought up, but we got to get people going back to the races, Clint.
Well, I think we got to look at ourselves. There's no question. We made some adjustments on the track. If you look back and if you go back and watch Bristol last Sunday, and if you honestly leave that view and say that that still wasn't good enough and enough excitement, man, I'm sorry. Just racing is not for you. I've been doing this a long time. I've been going to Bristol for a long time. I've been there the old way. I've been there the new way, everything in between. That was damn good racing. I'm telling you.
Yep.
I was in the car huffing and puffing, man. I was grinning from ear to ear, running down the leaders, and they're two or three wide, catching traffic, all things to provide good atmosphere at a race. But I think atmosphere is the key component. If I'm putting myself in the boat, say I'm retired, say I never even knew racing, just my personality and the way it is, say I still got my motor home, a group of friends, and I want to go for a race weekend. I want to go to Bristol. You can't be dead. You can't just go. I'm not going to go Friday, Saturday, and a Sunday, 3-day weekend to watch one day of racing. I want to see action packed. I want to see stuff, and I want stuff to do from the time I show up there to the time I leave. I want to go home dragging. I want to go home completely wore out, nothing left in the tank. And I feel like our tracks and our atmosphere has let that down a little bit. We've got to go back to the drawing board. I think some of these communities could help with that a little bit. I mean, I voiced it, man. You can't charge. We're not living in a day, and we don't have the demand right now for 300. I mean, you might see that as a Super Bowl or something else. But we've got to get back in check all across the board. Make it affordable for our fans to come here, first and foremost. Get it back, man. Get it back, and then, hey, if it's blowing through the roof and you can't get any more people packed in there, then you start adjusting the prices. But until then, I think it's time to look at ourselves and making this affordable for everybody. We owe it to ourselves to at least try. That's the way I see it.
Yeah, I couldn't have said it better myself, Clint. I appreciate you being the one to say it, and hopefully everyone listens. I know we're out of time, and you got a race at Richmond this weekend. Hopefully the rain stays away, and I know that's a place you've won at a couple times, but best of luck.
Thanks, man. Looking forward to it, brother.
Man, oh, man, what a way to wrap up the show. Clint Bowyer, of course, driver of the number 14 Stuart Haas Racing Ford, racing at Richmond this weekend. Appreciate him taking the time. A lot of good stuff there. We're going to revisit that when we come back next week. If you miss anything, go to thegamenashville.com, go to our pod center, and you can hear past episodes. My thanks to Daryl Waltrip, Clint Bowyer, and all of you for listening as well. I am Chase McCabe. Chasing Checkers comes back next Friday afternoon, ESPN 102.5 The Game.